Hey everyone, I'm Preston Lee.
And I'm Clay Mosley.
And this is Freelance to Founder. Every week, we sit down with freelancers like you for actionable coaching calls with one mission.
To help you ditch the feast famine lifestyle.
And build your own sustainable business.
At one point, we were both brand new freelancers, barely making ends meet.
But by now, we've started, grown, and even sold a few businesses of our own.
And we want to help you do the same. If you're ready to go from freelance to founder,
then join the army of freelancers who are taking matters into their own hands.
Visit freelancetofounder.com to apply for your own on-air coaching call. And now, get ready to take some notes because an all-new episode of Freelance to Founder starts right now.
On today's episode, we have a coaching call with Denise, a freelancer from South Carolina in the USA. Denise works in higher education, and she's happy with the way her freelance business is going. But after finding some early success in e-learning thanks to COVID and other factors, Denise is ready to branch out and grow other segments of her business. Throughout the call, we keep coming back to two critical themes: the importance of building your brand and the power of opportunity costs. If you want to build new revenue streams into your freelance business, but you're not sure how to go about it without burning out or losing a handle on the current revenue streams you have, take a listen to this coaching call. It'll be just what you need. We'll be back with Denise after this quick message from our sponsors. Oh, and before we kick off the episode today, I'm calling out anyone lurking in the shadows trying to work up the courage to join Clay and me here on the show. It's time to take action. And literally, there's almost nothing easier and more impactful than a coaching call where we can help you see the way through some of your biggest scaling hurdles. We need freelancers like you to keep this show going. Yes, actually you, listening right now to my voice. To join us on an upcoming episode, visit freelancetofounder.com and just scroll to the bottom of the page to sign up. I hope we can chat soon. Now onto the show. When you wake up in the morning and check your phone, does it feel like this or like this? Because with Shopify, your morning can feel like this way more often. That's the sound of a sale being made on your new Shopify store. And while client payments may require weeks or months of work, you can start generating a semi-passive income to grow your business by setting up a Shopify store all of your own. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your latest designs on shirts or bags or adding something totally different to your business, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. You can sell online, you can sell in person, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. With Shopify, you can set up your store in minutes and start selling immediately. And Shopify's award-winning support is there to help you as you go. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/freelance. That's all lowercase. That's shopify.com/freelance to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/freelance, or click the link in our show description and start waking up to this. Whether you want to travel more or communicate better with international clients, you need to try Babbel. I've used Babbel's courses, and you can do the same in order to learn real-life conversation skills in a different language, order food, ask for directions, or speak to clients without having to use translation apps. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription. This is only for our listeners at babbel.com/freelance. That's 60% off at babbel.com/freelance, spelled babbel.com/freelance. Rules and restrictions apply. Welcome back to another episode of Freelance to Founder. My name is Preston Lee from Millo.co. And joining me today on the air is my good friend Clay Mosley from GetDripify.com. Hey, Clay.
Hey, how's it going? I'm always happy to be here, even though we have technical issues like where we do every time.
Every time. I was telling Denise, who I'm about to introduce, that I swear we've done this like 60 or 70 times, and it never fails. There's always something we got to deal with. But everybody kind of knows how that is now, right? It's like with all the remote work and the Zoom stuff, like everyone's kind of sympathetic now to it. So it's all good. like I mentioned, joining us today is our new friend, Denise, calling from South Carolina in the U.S. Hi, Denise.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you. Thanks for taking time to call in. We're going to chat about Denise's business today. And before we dive in, I want to just remind you that we are currently looking for freelancers who want to grow their business and who want to jump on a coaching call with me and Clay. You know, Clay and I have both grown multiple businesses And we know a thing or two about what it takes to scale your service-based business, and we'd love to chat with you about your business. So just like Denise did, you can hop on a call with us, or like she's doing now, I should say, you can hop on a call with us. We just have you fill out a quick questionnaire. Just visit freelance2founder.com, and you can have a free coaching call with me and Clay. There's no upsell at the end or anything like that. We just want to chat with you about your business, and then share that episode with the rest of the world so they can learn as well. But anyway, that's enough of that. Denise, tell us a little bit about your business, what you're currently doing as a freelancer.
Sure. Thank you so much again for having me on the podcast. I currently specialize in e-learning. I'm an educational consultant, and I work with primarily colleges and universities, and I teach online courses. I also present at conferences and workshops and different things as well in regard to e-learning, which I absolutely love. That's one of my passions in my career is teaching online and helping online learners discover what their goals are.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
I love that. I think we need more and more of that. And obviously the world is going that way. Like, we could probably talk about education and the internet for a whole episode. I really love that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
Yeah. Well, tell us then maybe what your typical client looks like and what your business looks like right now.
Sure.
I think, have a pretty good idea of the kinds of services you offer maybe, but give us an idea of what your clients look like.
Okay. And just to give you a kind of a brief background on my business, I started out as a recruitment agency prior to the pandemic. And right before the onset of the pandemic, I began shifting my business because I recruited lots of people, but the retention factor was missing. And so I love, as I mentioned, online learning and instruction and training. So I shifted my business before the pandemic to focus on that online training component and began teaching online with universities as well. And then the pandemic hit. So it kind of caused me to shift the entire business to the online concept, which was, it just all fell into place that way. But my primary clients are the universities that I work with. And I feel, and one of the reasons I reached out to your show as well is that I do regard myself as a freelancer, but I assume that would be the right title for myself. But I work for several companies doing pretty much the same thing, whether it's teaching online or mentoring doctoral learners who are working on their dissertations or different things, but just basically working in higher education, primarily doing the online teaching. And it just has grown, as you mentioned already, the need has become so much greater in the last couple of years, it seems, than in prior years.
Yeah.
But that's the focus of what I do. And I absolutely love what I do. I want to maximize what I do. And so that growth potential or that growth element is where I'm stuck. You know, I'm looking at which direction my company or myself, really, is just me, but which direction I should expand in to find more opportunities to teach online and to be able to immerse myself in that e-learning higher education realm.
Okay. So when you say you're trying to expand out, like tell us about maybe the financial life cycle of a client. Is it kind of like you work with a university or something for a semester or two and then it's over, or does it tend to be long term, ongoing? Like, when you say walk us through, I guess, the reason why you would need to branch out, what's missing there?
Yeah, you know, and that's a great question, because that is one of the concerns. When I work with a university, I usually plan for it to be an undetermined amount of time. Usually, you know, if a university has a need for an instructor to teach, you know, they reach out and hire, you know, the instructor who has the background to teach that particular class. So my greatest joy is being able to forge those long-term relationships where I can teach for a long period of time with a particular university. sometimes you can be unsure of how long that may last. You know, it may be that the university may not have a need for that course that I happen to be teaching. So it could be a couple of terms that go by before you may teach that course or that they have a need for you to teach in that particular realm. So I think what by expanding, I would really like to have that opportunity to work with as many as I can, without sacrificing quality, of course. I don't want to be, you know, have so many, companies that I am not able to provide that high quality instruction.
So you can do it simultaneously, work with several universities at the same time.
And sometimes it may be that I work with a university for one semester, and then the following semester they may not have a need for that particular course, so I wouldn't teach with them for that semester. And then the following semester I may be working with them as well. And in addition to the universities, I'd like presenting at conferences, doing workshops. That's another part that I haven't been able to grow as quickly as the online instruction with higher education institutions. So that's another part of my freelance goals that I would like to expand as well. Just having that trouble of finding those opportunities to do those kinds of things is where I kind of hit an impasse in that part of my freelance career.
Okay. Well, I think this is a great time then to bring up, this survey that I mentioned previously you filled out. We ask everybody who comes on the show, you know, longtime listeners are going to be familiar with this. We say on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being a freelancer, 10 being a founder, where are you currently? You put that you're a 1, which I think jives with what you've told us today. You know, you're working by yourself, a few clients, and really trying to figure out where to go from here in terms of growth and diversification. But you said that in 6 to 12 months, you'd like to be more like a 7. And I'd be interested to hear, you know, you've given us a bit of a glimpse of maybe some of the goals you have and where you'd like to go. But could you paint for us a really clear picture of what a 7 would look like for you? What's an ideal scenario for you in the next 6 or maybe 12 months?
Okay. I struggled with that question because I thought that the higher the score was, that meant the more people I wanted to have working like a company. And so I struggled with that for a minute. And then I rated it, like you mentioned, the 7, because I would like to see myself freelancing in more than one industry. I like the freelancing with the higher education institutions. I absolutely love that. I also want to freelance in terms of writing, and writing books and publications, you know. And then there's another part where I'd like to do some freelancing in regard to, as I mentioned, speaking at different events. And I've started some of that, but I don't want to put myself in a box to only do just one thing. You know, I'd like to see myself expand more to be able to do more things, if that makes any sense, to be able to, step outside of one area and be able to specialize in another. It could be that one of those areas could expand to where there would be a need to hire people or to have contractors assisting in one of those areas. But I want to expand my mindset outside of the box of thinking I can only do, you know, I'm Denise, I have to do box A, and that's all Denise can do. You know, I don't want to remain in that box. I want to definitely exercise the potential of what I can possibly do.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you right, it sounds like in the next year, you'd like to not only be maybe teaching and mentoring in the e-learning space, but maybe become a bit of a personal brand, a bit of an expert in the field. People maybe go to you, read your books, maybe go to you for consulting or something like that in terms of e-learning, online education. Am I kind of getting the right picture here?
You painted the picture better than I did.
Well, I think that'll be a fun conversation because I don't know. I think Clay will have some fun things to talk about in terms of personal branding. I definitely will have a few things to add. Where would be most helpful, Denise, for us to start kind of the coaching portion of the call? Like what hurdles are you facing right in front of you that we could maybe help you overcome?
One of the things I would say is but and I don't want to mention too many things at once, but I guess you mentioned what's right in front of me. I would say I'm going to call it marketing, but that may be the wrong term. But being able to position myself in the correct space to really discover the opportunities to be able to get out there. And that probably doesn't make any sense. But, you know, just I guess being able to find the opportunities in e-learning to develop my brand. Like, what would the first step be in developing a brand? And how would I go about doing that? You know, I think that would probably be the first challenge is being able to establish that.
Yeah, sure. Clay, do you have any thoughts on where Denise could start in terms of like, how do I start building a brand that people can, you know, how do people think of Denise first when it comes to e-learning and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think this, as Denise, as you were talking, I was writing down several things. I think it goes beyond just that question of how do I start like a personal brand or a brand. Just really quick, I just want to know what percentage capacity do you think you are working at right now?
Oh, wow. That is a deep question. Percentage capacity. I would say probably 70%.
70. Okay. So you got some time. You got some room to grow. Mm-hmm. So the other question too I have too is like when you say look for opportunities. So you're talking about new opportunities to do a different type of service, not necessarily grow what you're currently doing. Is that correct?
Yes and no. I love what I'm doing, and I certainly want to continue with that. But I also want to be exposed to different opportunities where I can exercise the skills that I have that are very similar to the online instruction. And one example of that would be, say, for example, presenting at a conference or perhaps working with a business that may not be affiliated with education that is looking for someone to develop a training program for their company, you know, to be able to, you know, the e-learning concept, definitely I want to focus on that, but not to be locked in the box of just one particular industry.
Yeah. Okay. So this is really interesting. I actually used to have a client back when I had my agency who was in a similar space, not exactly the same thing you're doing, but very similar. And it sounds like you and her were in the same kind of position whenever I was first introduced to this person. And it's more of like they want to grow, but they're also looking at trying to do like other things. And so the only thing I would just give you fair warning here is to try like, and I completely understand trying to look at other opportunities, other verticals, but just be aware of your time as well, because that's why I asked you about your capacity, because as you add on new things, like you're going to be very, very busy. And not in the sense of like you're at full capacity. I mean, it's going to look like you're over here doing this thing, you're over here doing this other thing, you're over here doing this other thing. And it's really difficult to manage your time efficiently whenever you're doing that. And so I'm just going to preemptively say this, and just because I know this is actually a personal experience of mine, just preemptively say whenever you dive into going into these new opportunities to just be aware of time and capacity issues.
Definitely.
Because that kind of stuff can, like, especially if you have different processes for each different type of service, like that can be so inefficient. I know that wasn't the kind of the question here, but so anyways.
Can I just add to that real quick, Clay? Yeah. I think that's really good advice. I'm kind of a glutton for punishment in this area where it's like every time I want to launch something new, I sort of estimate like, okay, it's probably going to take, you know, another so many hours a week or whatever to manage. But what I forget is often as you're ramping it up, it takes way more time and effort. And so like,
it's usually double for me.
At least like, and so yes, it might settle back down into kind of not necessarily autopilot, but definitely more manageable. It might get to that point eventually, where maybe the stuff you're currently doing, Denise, is at. But in the beginning, like to ramp up a new service or a new offering or a new process or a new client base or a new project or whatever, like it takes so much more time and effort in the beginning stages. And so it can be, from a practical point of view, I love what Clay is saying here. Like it might make sense to hire some subcontractors, that can help with your current processes that you know are already kind of flowing along nicely. You know what to expect. You know how long things take. Yeah. Maybe you could bring someone on board, or maybe you could find some software that helps you be a little more productive in those areas so that you can dedicate more time to any new initiatives that you might bring in.
Have you ever noticed that many of the problems people call in with on this show can be solved by hiring someone? Sometimes you need a full-fledged team, other times maybe just a simple assistant or an expert in something you're not great at. Whatever your reason for hiring, we recommend you take a look at LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. As you may know already, LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. And LinkedIn Jobs makes the process of finding the perfect teammate easy and intuitive. Hiring is always easy when you have access to so many quality candidates. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours when using LinkedIn Jobs. I've used it myself, and it was so simple. In fact, I've made multiple hires using LinkedIn Jobs. And did I mention, by the way, it's free to business owners like me and you. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/freelance. That's linkedin.com/freelance to post your job for free, or click the link in our show description. Terms and conditions apply. You know, working from home is mostly great, but there are some days when I realize I haven't left my house or even my chair like all day. Have you been there? Getting outside to exercise or making a trip to the gym are just harder now that my office is just a flight of stairs away. If you're stuck in the same rut as me, then you should try Hydro. That's H-Y-D-R-O-W. With the Hydro Rower and 20 minutes a day, getting a full body workout is so much easier. Hydro can work up to 86% of your muscles in just 20 minutes for an insane effective home workout. That's because Hydro pairs the effectiveness of rowing with the power of technology to connect you with over 5,000 video trainings, classes, and workouts. And get ready to get out from behind your home desk, because after a few months of daily rowing with Hydro, your partner's going to want to take you out for a night on the town to show you off. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use code freelance to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydrow.com and promo code freelance to save $400. Hydro.com, promo code freelance, or just click the link in our show description.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely hear what you're saying. And I agree 100%. I will often limit accepting new opportunities at the expense of quality, because I truly believe that everything that I do, I like to put 100% in. And when I get to a point where I can't do my best, my absolute best, then I know that I cannot accept any more work. I just feel like if people are investing in my time and they have asked me to do something for them, I'm going to make sure I do my best. So I definitely agree with the that overwhelm. When I worked full time, I definitely felt overwhelmed. So yeah. I know how that feels. Yeah, and definitely. So in my freelance career, I have not felt that overwhelm. I don't plan on feeling that overwhelm.
Yeah, that's good.
So I really appreciate that, that feedback on that. And I agree 110%. I definitely don't want to take on more than what I can effectively manage with quality. I underline that because I believe in that.
Go ahead, Clay.
Sorry. Oh, so I was going to say, like, I think where this could be resolved, and I went through this, I don't know how many times, but it all comes back down to like fundamentals. And so what I mean by that is, and you've heard it a million times, who is your ideal client, right? Mm-hmm. So you hear that all the time, but let's actually run through this exercise. So who would you say, Denise, is your ideal client right now?
If this is not too broad of a term, I would say educators. If I, as much as I would like to branch out and help a manufacturing company and then help a whatever else kind of industry, if I had to hone in like I have made myself do over the last year, it would definitely be education, educators, because that's my background.
Okay. So let's go deeper than that.
Okay.
What kind of educators?
Ooh, okay. I'm a little torn. My background is in public education, K-12 ed, but mm-hmm. my e-learning opportunities have been in higher education. So okay. I would have to say higher education, because through higher education, I am able to work with K-12 instructors and personnel in school districts, because I do so much, many different roles with the higher ed institutions.
Okay. So let's go one more level. Let's go deeper than that. So right now it's higher education, right? Educators.
Yes.
I don't know how, I guess that's the best way to say that. Yeah. So if you go deeper one more level, what would you say that level is?
As my, the client, you mean?
Like, yes. The ideal client. So like, because there's a lot of higher education universities out there, right? Like there's a ton of them. So like, look at your current client base and think about who is paying you the most money, but who at the same time, simultaneously, these both factors have to exist, you actually like working with. So look at those factors and think, what is a common trend among those people, right? It could be they're all on the West Coast, or they're all in certain states, you know, because states different. I know there's different laws in education depending on which state. Mm-hmm. And there's certain contracts and available and things like that. So that's a deeper level. So like, if you had to guess, it's okay if you don't know this right now. If you don't, we can move on. That's something you could think about later. But do you know of the next level that would be besides higher education?
Maybe if I had to take it to another level, maybe I would say I started to say online mm-hmm. higher education, because I work with both traditional universities and online universities, but my interactions have been strictly teaching and engaging with the universities in an online capacity.
Well, this is interesting. So the majority, which one would you say is the majority of your revenue right now? Are these universities that are online only? Are they traditional only, or are they a mix?
I work with several. So there are some that are traditional that are just integrating online programs. And then there are those who have been strictly online that you know, I work with. And then there's the other combo. They're both traditional with well-established online programs. So it's an even mix. Yeah. But the target, of course, rather than in-person instruction, it is online or what I like to call e-learning. It's basically with those universities.
Okay. So, you could dig deeper into this later. But like, let's mm-hmm. just say, for instance, one of those is just easier to get. Maybe like if you have a traditional school versus one that's online only, mm-hmm. maybe the contracts are easier to get. For one of those, I don't know, or it could be something like that. So to me, like maybe I'm just going to say hypothetically, your ideal client is higher education where schools are traditional only, and they're trying to get into the e-space, right? The e-learning mm-hmm. space.
Okay.
So let's just say like hypothetically, that is your ideal client. And you have to be specific like that, because what you offer is going to be completely dependent on who that is. Because if you, and I know you're talking about like other opportunities and things like that, but the thing you have to think about though is, who do you actually want to work with? Like, who? Because you don't want to just say all educators, like, because mm-hmm. honestly, if you don't know it by now, you will later, that is a bad move, because there's going to be types of clients that you do not like working with. So you're going to want to work with whoever your ideal client is, whoever you've established. And by the way, that can change. Mm-hmm. Just because you set it now doesn't mean you can't change it later if something changes in your business model. But my point is what the service that you offer is going to be catered to whoever that ideal client that you have specified. Because if you try to do another service that, let's just say, manufacturing, and I'm saying this because you said it, maybe your service doesn't quite fit that at all. Let's just say you don't really like to work with manufacturing companies. You just see opportunity, which I totally get, that there's opportunity everywhere. That does not mean you need to pursue it.
Yeah,
because you need to do things, this is my two cents, things that you are passionate about, that you absolutely love doing, because that's what makes a business sustainable.
Yes.
And it prevents burnout. So,
yeah, especially a business where you are the business, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know, does that hit home with you at all?
It does. And I actually made that decision to not cross over into other industries that, it's very hard. Or at least it was hard for me when I first started out with my first company, to get into the concept of being in a niche. You know, I wanted to recruit for everybody. For every industry, because there was so much business out there. And I found out after the first 6 months when I tried to do that, that when you have that niche, you will get more of people from one industry than you will trying to cast that net wide. And so because my background was in public education, my niche was public schools.
That's so much easier to sell.
It is.
So much easier to sell. Like if you go to a manufacturer and they see that, if you were to have manufacturing experience, that is easier to sell versus you having public education experience.
So
it's all about, one, to me, what's the easiest to sell? And two, what do you want to be known for? Do you want to be known for the person who in e-learning, in education? To me, that sounds like the avenue to go. Because it's so much easier to brand yourself if you brand yourself like that.
That's the whole point of branding, right? If you want to become this personal brand where you can write books and speak and expand into all these different arenas that you're talking about, you have to be known for something fairly specific. Otherwise, you become just kind of a Jill of all trades, if you will. And even when you're doing it, doing one specific thing, if you're doing it for anyone and everyone, then it becomes very hard to be the go-to person or the go-to brand.
Right.
For any particular thing. And if I can...
Now, that's not to say that if you add on to your team and someone who has manufacturing experience, that you cannot expand into that. You could 100% expand into that if you add on to your team and that person has, experience. So,
Okay. Well, let me ask this, if this is okay. In regard to, branding, I am totally all for... the targeting of this being specific and intentional with higher education. If I had to pick one industry and one thing to focus in on, that is not an issue at all. I absolutely love what I do. I love the online instruction. Some things have kind of naturally began to flow from doing that, such as the writing, because in higher education, you're encouraged to write. And so that kind of naturally flows from what I'm doing. So I don't want to get too far away from what will naturally flow from my focus. So I guess all of the areas that I would like to branch out in, and I mentioned about having several companies, the things that I want to naturally branch at, they would be natural extensions of my primary focus. So, if that makes any sense. I don't want to go out on, I don't want to be out in left field and say, okay, now I'm going to be a manufacturing e-learning expert. But I also want to be this kind of, I want things to naturally flow.
Yeah. I think it's for me, it comes down to opportunity cost. And it's everything that you choose to branch out and add to your business, yes, does it complement the core of your business that you know is working? There may come a day when you start a completely different business that's unrelated to what you're doing now, but that moment is not now. It doesn't feel instead, it's how do I add on pieces to this thing that's already working to become, better known or better respected, or be able to charge higher fees, or how can I add on pieces here and there instead of how, you know, what's something totally revolutionary and different that I can do over here? Because that's going to take so much more effort and time to start something new from scratch instead of like just adding on a piece here and adding on a piece there, where you can also get maybe assistance from subcontractors and things like that.
Denise, can I ask you, so do you literally only do one thing for your clients right now? Like, can you go into more detail about what you actually...
Yeah. In addition to teaching online instruction, occasionally I speak at conferences. I've done that usually maybe once, maybe twice a year. When the pandemic hit, I didn't have any conferences after that. But you just occasionally I do that. I write books. I've written one book already, and I'm working on a second one. So I call these businesses. They don't necessarily, I guess, have to comprise businesses, but basically what I do now, the primary thing that I do now is teach online for colleges and universities, which I absolutely love doing.
Are there any other things that the universities ask you to do other than teach courses?
Yes, I serve on committees for doctoral learners as they work on their dissertations. I've been asked to take part in different, endeavors with the university in terms of it could be curriculum reviews or, you know,
are
different
these
things like that.
Paid or volunteered?
These are paid.
Paid. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So all of what I've been doing has been related to it. And it's not anything to try to get away from what I'm doing. But as I'm a freelancer, I didn't at the time call it a business, but I have realized that I guess it is a business. You know, even I might not have a different name to it other than my own name, but I definitely want to try to grow it as in relation to what I currently have. You know, I always emphasize the overwhelm principle because I know how that feels and I won't be back there again. I want to keep it in perspective, but that branding part is really, I guess, and maybe I don't need branding. Maybe I need to focus on what I'm currently doing, but it's just great to hear all of what you all are saying, because I'm really hearing this. This is really great information.
So when the universities ask you to be a part of an advisory board? Is that what you said?
Like maybe reviews of different. Oh, reviews. Maybe reviewing student work and aligning. Okay.
Which one takes up more time? Teaching courses or that one?
Oh, teaching courses. Sometimes I design courses.
Which one do you make more money?
Oh, the teaching. The other duties are like very smaller side things. I wouldn't necessarily call them jobs, but they may offer this. They want someone to help out with reviewing a curriculum or something. It's just kind of something that the universities will offer to help you work with other faculty members and to help them with their evaluation services and different things. But
what percentage of your clients do you do teaching only versus teaching and doing these extracurricular things?
Teaching only is probably 75%. And the other 25%, I work with doctoral learners on their dissertation committees and supervise aspiring teachers as they're going into their profession. That's probably about 25%. And those are paid as well.
Do you see where I'm going with this?
I think so.
Yeah. So the reason I'm saying this is because I'm a big advocate for increasing revenue with what you're currently doing and grow that. Uh-huh. Before you expand into other areas, because expanding into other areas and doing other services, there's way more ramp up. It usually costs money and more time. And so when I asked you at the beginning, what's your current capacity? You're at 70%. Uh-huh. Okay, so you make most of your money teaching courses, but it also takes up most of your time versus the extracurricular stuff. But only 25% of your client base, you do the extra stuff. But you said that doesn't take up that much time. Right. And so I would highly encourage you to hit up the 75% of your clients where you only do teaching. Uh-huh. And I don't know how this works in your world, but basically pitch them on your services to do the extra stuff, because you can increase your revenue quite substantially, I would guess, just based off the numbers that you're telling me, by doing that. And they're already clients, so the selling part should be fairly easy versus breaking into a new service or opportunity area.
Okay,
I don't know, Preston, you have any thoughts there?
I think for me that's spot on. Like, where is there an easy revenue increase opportunity without having to launch something completely new? Mm-hmm. And I think, of course, you know, the universities or whoever, whoever your client is, they will all have different rules and regulations about this. But one thought I've had is, from a practical point of view, I wonder if you could, for example, hire an assistant, a part-time assistant of some kind, mm-hmm. who could help you do some of the more, I guess, rote or planned or sort of just, what am I trying to say? Just like the habitual stuff of the job. So I've done some online mm-hmm. teaching recently, and uh-huh. I happen to know that like the engaging with the students is really important and fun and interesting. And then the grading of the work, at least for me, was not quite so fun and interesting. and so like, you know, again, depending on what the regulations are with your clients and the universities, you could potentially hire someone to do some of those more menial tasks or repetitive tasks that just basically are checklist work. Like, did they complete this? Did it meet specifications, et cetera, et cetera? And then all the time you save by hiring a subcontractor or an assistant of that nature, you could put into what Clay is talking about here, which is like, you could then offer more high-level stuff, consulting, sitting on these boards, offering, you know, advice, potentially speaking or writing or doing any of those things to continue to grow your personal brand. I just think I guess what I'm really getting at is, I think it's important to keep in mind that like some of the biggest personal brands, and you know, you're probably not trying to become the next huge household name personal brand, but I think it can be instructive to look at some of these people like the Marie Forleos of the world, the Pat Flynns, the Tony Robbins of the world. They are huge personal brands. We know their names. But they aren't a solo team. They don't do it all on their own, right? They have huge teams in a lot of cases. And so having one or two people who maybe do some of your more repetitive, programmable, planned tasks throughout the day can free you up. Again, it comes back to opportunity cost, can free you up to do some of that more growth-focused work. I don't know. That was long-winded. Denise, what's resonating with you? No. Where are we headed in the right direction here?
Yeah, I like what you said. And because of the online instruction and lots of, you know, like you mentioned about being cognizant of the guidelines and restrictions of the university. And of course, with FERPA guidelines, I wouldn't be able to allow somebody, you know, to kind of come in and assist with that. But there are some other things outside of the online instruction component that I may be able to get some assistance with to be able to free up some time. So that when you said that got me to thinking. So that really resonated with me.
Yeah, I would highly encourage you to do the math if you haven't already behind your business. Mm-hmm. And so what I mean by that is, where do you make where do you make the biggest bang for your buck?
Yeah.
So like for example, I sell something that's really low dollar that costs $19. Mm-hmm. I sell a lot of them, but I don't make a ton of revenue, but I also don't spend any time on it. Now, where I spend all of my time is they're on my high ticket items, mm-hmm. like per client, right? So yeah. like that's where I spend all my time. And by the way, they're the easiest things that I do. Mm-hmm. And so that actually required my time. So I would encourage you to look at the math and think, okay, how much am I making per, I don't know how it's priced in your world, but like per class that you teach, mm-hmm. versus how much money you make per committee or something like on the higher end. Mm-hmm. And so I would figure out what that is, like how much money you make per like unit, whatever that unit is, and try to do more of that. Yeah. And then minimize the things yeah. that mm-hmm. that take up a lot of your time, but you're making very little revenue. Because yeah. that's where a lot of people, they bottleneck themselves that way.
Yeah. And you know what, Clay, that is so wise. I recently did a little of that. I did do that looking at the numbers that you mentioned. And that is very revealing when you really
very
do
revealing.
That. Yeah. And I, yeah. I've made one rule since I have become a freelancer. I only accept jobs that I love and that reward me or that adequately, at minimally, that they adequately compensate me for the time and efforts that I put in.
Yeah, good
and,
for you.
And when I established that rule, things began to fall into order. So I really
funny how that works, right?
Yeah, yeah like it's yeah. not all about the money, right? Obviously, yeah. but it's mm-hmm. certainly when it comes to business, that's what levels the playing field. That's what keeps you in business or puts you out of business. Is whether or not you're making enough money to sustain yourself. And so, yes, it's important that you like what you do and it's important that you enjoy, you know, the people you work with and you like your clients and everything's a good fit. But all of that aside, like revenue for your business is mm-hmm. the great equalizer. And so yeah. I agree, like, you know, it's whether you choose to do the math by the hour or by the project or by the class or whatever it is, you know, you might make way more money by the hour speaking, for example, but if you're teaching so many classes that you don't have time to go set up new speaking arrangements, then you're never going to be able to grow that portion of your business. So mm-hmm. it is, I just yeah. love the sort of recurring theme here we keep coming back to, which is opportunity cost. Everything you do in your business, mm-hmm. especially when you're a solopreneur and a single person working in your business, everything's an opportunity cost.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a good rule of thumb, I can't credit this to me, but somebody said, for anything that you do that a $15 an hour person can do instead, that's what you need to just outsource or hire for.
Yeah. Wow. That's good advice. Mm-hmm. I like that. Thank you.
Yeah. Like, well, it hit home for me too. I was like, I still find myself totally. Doing $15 an hour tasks.
Yeah.
You know, like... Yeah.
Because the whole thing is like, Clay, you could in that hour, you could go book a customer for like $5,000, right? And so like, you know, how many times a day are you doing $15 an hour tasks and missing out on $5,000 because you haven't hired someone to do that other task? It's really it can be eye-opening and it can be a little scary. You know, because then you have to go do those other tasks that bring in more revenue in order to pay the people that you've hired. But that's really how a business is scaled. That's how you grow different portions of your business. It's how you grow your revenue. It's how you get beyond where you're at right now.
Yeah. And one thing that you all have both said that resonated with me, one of the many things that you've said that has resonated with me was when you had me look at the business at the business of freelancing and determine what percentage is bringing in the revenue, because the percentage that's bringing in the revenue is the percentage that I love. And so it really made me focus. I'm like, okay, well, if what I love is the primary source of revenue, then I need to maybe just get a tunnel vision there for a moment and kind mm-hmm. of look at opportunities there. So I like that being able to look at it from this perspective. I haven't had the opportunity to have experts ask me these questions. So this is a really great coaching opportunity. This is wonderful. And I really appreciate it.
Well, great. Also, can I say one thing real quick?
Of course.
I know we're coming up on the end
of
here.
Good. Go.
So Denise, as you're going through this, so I'd say do all the things that we've said up to this point, but like whenever you're ready to scale, even more. So not just grow, but scale. Mm-hmm. I would I would encourage you to look at, as far as like looking for opportunities, this is where you find it.
Okay.
Look at the questions, the common questions that your clients are asking.
Okay.
Like, and keep track of that. Because if you see something like out of 100 questions that 32 of the 100 are the same question,
mm-hmm.
I bet you can build a service around that question.
Wow.
And people would buy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like people try to come up with like these services and products and they think it's a good idea, but like they go and build the thing and then they try to sell it and nobody wants it.
Right.
And so where better place to get ideas for opportunities to make money other than your client? Like there's no other better place in that than keeping track of what your clients ask. Or your ideal client or your target market, right? Just keep a track, mm-hmm. keep track of what they're asking. Like Facebook groups, if you're part of any Facebook groups where they're all higher education people, I would encourage you to just listen to the group. And what I mean by that is like there's a few entrepreneur groups I'm a part of that, where I am never active. Like I never mm-hmm. comment on anything and I never engage with anything. And this is against what every marketer will tell you. But the fact is, like, I don't do that because I just don't have the time to go and engage in like 100 different groups, but I listen. And so what I'm listening for is I'm looking to see what are the common things people are asking. And then I go and create a product around it and then I sell it. That's it.
Wow.
Like that is the best place to look for opportunities.
Wow. That's great information. I'm here writing down what you said.
Well, Denise, I think we have covered a lot today. I'm excited to see where you take some of these ideas around, you know, building a personal brand and maybe some contracting out smaller tasks where you can, or just all this opportunity cost talk. And then that awesome advice from Clay at the end there as well. Of using your clients and the things they talk about to identify the best places to actually branch out your business, because there are lots of ways you could branch out your business, but again, unless your clients are actually willing to pay for it or interested in it or have a pain point that needs solved, it's not really going to bring in enough revenue to sustain your business. So I think it's been a great conversation today. Is there anything else we should talk about in the last couple minutes that we have here, Denise?
Preston and Clay, you both have been wonderful. I have a page of notes here, and you have given me a lot of great ideas in terms of the branding and the marketing, and just even what you both just said a few minutes ago about finding out what people are asking about. What are the people that I'm already serving? What do they need? What are they looking for? So, yeah. I mean, those are powerful questions that have motivated me today. So I deeply appreciate this coaching session.
You know what I would love, and I'm sure Preston would love this too.
Uh-huh.
If you don't, you don't have to. I'm just saying that this would be amazing. If you took a picture of those notes and posted it in the Milo Facebook group, like, and said, "Look what I just got on my coaching call on this podcast."
We'd love that. We'd love to see some of your notes. That'd be great. Yeah. That'd be a lot of fun. And you know, it's not a coincidence that at the top of the show, our little intro, we've had it forever, and it says, "Get ready to take some notes because an all new episode of Freelance to Founder." And we mean it. Like we hope that some of the stuff we talk about on the show, hopefully, not only Denise is taking notes, but other listeners as well. We hope that there's some stuff. I personally take notes for my own business. When Clay's talking, I'm like, oh yeah, that's. Or a guest will bring up something. I'm like, you know what? That's something I could try in my business or something I could learn from. So it's fun to learn all together. I appreciate both of you taking time out of your schedules today to be on the call. And especially thanks to Denise for jumping on a coaching call. We really appreciate it.
Oh, wow. Thank you for this opportunity.
All right. Thank you, Denise.
Take care.
Thank you. You too.
Freelance to Founder is produced by the team at Millo. Visit millo.co to level up your freelancing.
And Drippify, visit getdrippify.com to become a bad A in business.
Freelance to Founder is also part of The Podglomerate. You can check out more amazing podcasts at thepodglomerate.com. The theme music for this show was produced by Joaquin Carude.
You can catch past episodes at freelancetofounder.com or by searching Freelance to Founder in your favorite podcast player.
While you're at it, we'd love an honest review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's all for now. Until next time, see ya.